Welcome to the Newsbusters podcast with the executive editor of Newsbusters, your host, Tim Graham.
Hello, and welcome to the Newsbusters podcast, where we never, ever pretend to be uncommitted voters. This week we'll discuss the so-called alleged town hall meetings that TV networks hold. First of all, the new column is about the wave of anti-Trump authors. Kyle Drennan and I discussed this last week. We're still seeing it. A lot of Bob Woodward out there, so go to Newsbusters and check that out. And if you want a not anti-Trump book, but a news-busting book, Unmasked by Brent Bozell and Tim Graham, still available. All right, so last night, ABC had a 90-minute town hall hosted by George Stephanopoulos. And obviously, George Stephanopoulos is not somebody who's Trump-friendly. George Stephanopoulos is somebody who was an official spin controller for Bill Clinton. George Stephanopoulos was the guy you could see in the old movie The War Room trying to talk people out of doing stories about Bill Clinton, you know, sleeping around or hanging around women he shouldn't be hanging around. You know, he and James Carville were the original people stopping what they called the bimbo eruptions. Let's not let the bimbo say anything about what they did with Governor Clinton. And then that, of course, got him a job in the White House as really the first press secretary for Clinton. And the joke would be he's still the press secretary for Clinton. He just works for ABC News. That's what we saw last night in this town hall meeting. Look, I call it an alleged so-called town hall because it's very plastic. You know, they get so quote-unquote real people, but it's very carefully organized and curated. They choose the person, they pre-screen your question, and then they decide where in the program you will be used. Now, it was a little bit more interesting last night because sometimes they say no follow-ups. Well, that wasn't the case last night, so that the questioners could sort of follow up and keep pushing the president around. But there was obviously an anti-Trump tilt last night. You know, just from the get-go, the very first question was a man saying, you know, I have pre-existing conditions. I'm nervous about the COVID, and you threw us under the bus. You know, that is not a science-y question. And again, a lot of these you'd say, are these really uncommitted voters? Because they don't sound uncommitted. My tack is usually to, they put the name on the screen, I will Google the name to see who these people are. And they were at least, ABC and Stephanopoulos were at least telling you in most cases who this person voted for the last time. Whether they were a Trump voter, whether they were a Hillary Clinton voter, whether they were a Jill Stein voter for the Green Party. So you could at least factor that in. But overwhelmingly, these were hostile questions for Trump. They were phrased in hostile ways. And he took it pretty calmly. The questioners asking anti-Trump questions weren't satisfied with Trump's answers, but that's probably why they were chosen to be on the program. They were asking a hostile question, expecting a liberal answer, which they were never going to get. The obvious contrast here with the ABC town hall with Trump on Tuesday night is the CNN town hall with Joe Biden on Thursday night. There will probably be a pretty dramatic contrast between the kind of hardballs that Trump received and what kind of questioning Biden's going to get. And if Biden gets tough questions, I think we can guess they're going to be tough questions about how he's not supportive enough of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. He's not supportive enough of the Green New Deal. He's not supportive enough of Medicare for All. But, you know, CNN's record in this election cycle was to have town halls for Democrats. What about, there were, what, 27 candidates? And I think they must have had town halls for at least like 22 of them. And in many cases, multiple town halls. Biden, I think, had multiple town halls. Kamala Harris had multiple town halls. And they were very, again, carefully curated. Who was allowed to participate? Only Democrats. There were no Trump voters allowed. There were no real independent voters allowed. This was Democrat events for Democrats. Everybody asking Democrat questions. I would hope that's not what we're going to get this time since we're in general election season. But who knows? Generally, the pattern with these, when they've had presidential debates with this format, with this alleged so-called town hall format, there is always a tilt. So, I obviously CNN had a tilt here in that in the early stages of the primaries, and people forget this now, Donald Trump for a few months had actual Republican challengers. It's really easy to forget. I was trying to remember. Just despite the fact that Bill Kristol gave money to all of three of them, doesn't mean you're going to remember them. I remember Bill Weld, first of all, who of course ran as the vice president on the Libertarian ticket in 2016, former governor of Massachusetts. Former Illinois Congressman Joe Walsh, I remembered that one. Somebody actually made a t-shirt for that guy that said, "Make a Walsh for president." That's just how lame that campaign was. Couldn't think of the third guy. I had to go to Google, and it was Mark Sanford, the former governor of South Carolina, the Mark Sanford of the Appalachian Trail. So CNN didn't have any space for Never Trump Republican town halls with Republican questioners. They just weren't going to give them any time, which is kind of funny, considering how much you'd think they'd like anti-Trump Republicans saying anti-Trump things on CNN. So CNN could have a town hall for Eric Swalwell. CNN could have a town hall for Seth Moulton. CNN could have a town hall for New Age guru Marianne Williamson, where we could all have a seance. But somehow, poor Bill Weld and Walsh and Sanford wouldn't get a town hall. Anyway, in the history of these town hall debates on the presidential level, we've seen this in the fall, usually they'll have one quote-unquote town hall debate. The first one of these really was in 1992 when it was George H.W. Bush, Slick Willie, and Ross Perot. Can I finish? This was the one where apparently the huge news story coming out of the debate was that President Bush, somewhere near the end, had looked at his watch. This was shown as his contempt for these so-called uncommitted voters, that he would dare to look at his watch and see if this thing was about over. Many people at home did the same thing, but somehow this was almost a crime. He looked at his watch. And really, the famous / infamous question asked by a town hall questioner in the 1992 town hall debate was someone who we've all come to know as Ponytail Guy. This was a social worker, and he stood up and he literally asked, "How can we, as symbolically the children of the future president, expect the two of you, the three of you, to meet our needs? We are all symbolically the children of the president." Like, sit down! And of course, they all sort of pander to the question because they're presidential candidates. And this is where, I would be tempted to say, this, sir, is a rather silly and expansive view of the federal government's powers, that you are all children and our great national father sits in Washington, D.C. and parents you all. But, you know, the pattern over the years has been that these carefully selected, pre-screened, I read your question, now you may ask your question, then sit down. They almost always have a liberal tilt. The Democrats always get an advantage. The hard balls are all coming from the left. And the Democrats get easy questions. For example, in 2000, the town hall debate, Al Gore was asked, would you be open to the idea of a national health care plan for everybody? And then there was a question for Bush, which was, of course, much more specific and negative. We'd like to know why you object to the Brady handgun bill if you do object to it. Because in a recent TV ad, it showed the NRA says, if you're elected, they will be working out of your office. Actually, that kind of bothers me, was the end of the question. So you take sort of one of the liberal media highlights from that race, where the NRA was boasting, or somebody at the NRA was heard boasting, or an anonymous source said they boasted that they'd be working out of Bush's office. Let's make sure we work that into the debates. Just like last night, these networks so sensitive to misinformation would put on a voter to ask Trump why he called our war dead suckers and losers. He very quickly said, never said it. Fake news. But, you know, they carefully pre-screened this question where an anonymous source said things that most people who are around Trump said he never said. But they liked the sound of it. Mr. President, how could you call our war dead suckers and losers? They're not going to let somebody get up at the CNN town hall debate and say, Mr. Biden, why did you rape Tara Reid? You know, that's never going to get asked. No version of the Tara Reid question, I'm going to guess, is going to be asked. Correct me if I'm wrong. I will be shocked. So when they looked at these over the years, Rich Noyes did a study in 2008 or two, I guess 2012, because he looked at all the town hall debates for, in 92, 96, 2000, 2004, and 2008. And his overall tilt was 28 to the left, 14 to the right, or 2-to-1 tilt. Now, that's only because in the 2004 town hall debate, ABC's Charlie Gibson went 8-8. He was fair and balanced. That was shocking. It would have been nice to have 8-8 last night among the so-called uncommitted voters. So typically, if you take out Charlie Gibson, it's 20-6 or 10-3, you know, do your division. But that's kind of what usually happens in these debates. That, to me, is what happens in debates with moderators, not just debates with so-called uncommitted voters, is that a preponderance of questions comes from the left. And you know, the Republican has to deal with it, and the Democrat enjoys it. So last night, the night crew was in, video tweeting segments from this ABC spectacle. One of them was Curtis Houck, the managing editor of Newsbusters, graduate of Penn State, fan of Washington Capitals and Nationals, and for some reason, the Cincinnati Bengals.
Yeah, that was weird. I wanted to cheer for someone other than the Eagles, and at the time, I wanted to find the worst team in the NFL, and obviously that was the Cincinnati Bengals, right around when they drafted Carson Palmer, so two quarterbacks later.
Well, we should mention you're from Lancaster, Pennsylvania, so you'd be expected to be an Eagles fan.
Correct, exactly. We're definitely towards the eastern part of the state.
So Curtis tweets a lot of video. He's over 30,000 followers now.
Yeah.
Headed for 32,000 mm-hmm. at Curtis Houck, H-O-U-C-K.
Correct. Not A.
And the cheesy way to do it would be to say, you know, Curtis, watches like a Hulk. cheese. See, I'm from Wisconsin. We do cheese.
Yeah.
What were your general impressions as you watched this thing live? I know we were watching it live and G-chatting. Oh my God, what are they doing?
Right. I thought it was really good debate prep for President Trump. I'm not sure how much he's been doing with the campaign and Chris Christie. I know, I thought I saw a report that he was going to reprise his role playing the Democratic candidate. But I think this was a really good opportunity because it was 90 minutes of hostile questioning from George Stephanopoulos. Yeah. And I think it was billed as a town hall, and as I wrote in the lead for my portion at Newsbusters, yes, it was billed as a town hall, but it ended up being a Stephanopoulos interview featuring questions from undecided voters.
Yeah, I mean, there was just so much quote-unquote fact-checking and so much objecting. I think the tweet I had was, it should be called The President, the People, and then George Stephanopoulos yelling at the president.
Right. I mean, it was one question, one interruption, one argument. You know, a lot of the time, Stephanopoulos wasn't really even asking him questions or follow-up questions, because usually that's what you would see in some of these town hall specials. An audience member would ask a question and then maybe a follow-up, and then the host would engage on that topic by asking additional questions. Instead, what you had from Stephanopoulos was not really asking questions, but making statements, political statements, saying, I have to stop you there. And at one point by the end, one of my favorite parts was when the president was talking about Democratic cities and Democratic states. And he goes, George, I know you're a Democrat, but this is a Democrat problem. And Stephanopoulos was just left cold there, and I thought it was really good. The president, I think, was definitely ready for it. You know, we wrote in Newsbusters, Nick Fonacaro and I both said in our headlines that it was an ambush. Laura Ingraham said that last night as well, and you can definitely call it that, but I will add that the president was definitely ready for it, and if he wasn't or didn't know what he was getting into, he definitely knew by the first question that this was going to be 90 minutes of brawling.
What they want is a bailout of Democrat-run states that are doing poorly. And, you know, I don't think this is the right
way
to go.
Why do you keep talking about Democrat states
and
Democrat cities? They're American states and American cities.
Democrat-run states are the ones that are doing badly, George. If you look at New York, if you look at Illinois, if you look at a lot of different places, they're doing poorly. And cities, in particular, cities.
Yeah, the moment for me that I really enjoyed from the president is when he mentioned
Omar Jimenez, yeah.
And this infamous scene of him standing in front of burning buildings.
Yeah.
Mostly peaceful.
Yeah, and he said he couldn't believe it, that the media were trying to do this, but, you know, he said right over his shoulder, and you saw that, right over his shoulder, the city is burning. It looked like it was Berlin during the war. It was the craziest thing I've ever seen. I don't know why the media tries to make so light of it. These are not protests. These are far greater than protests.
Yeah, and then Stephanopoulos is like, let's go to a commercial.
Right, exactly. Just like when he talked about going to a break, talking about the coronavirus vaccine, and Stephanopoulos goes to break saying, the question is, will it be safe? We'll be back. And you're like, whoa.
They have that habit of doing that. It's sort of like, you know, last weekend, and Peter Alexander is on with Ronna McDaniel, and the interview is over, and he has to say, thanks for coming in. Oh, by the way, Republican cities have increases in murders too. Now on to the commercial. They always have to like squeeze in a rebuttal, even at the end. And this is where it's like, you're not a moderator if you're constantly rebutting what the president's saying.
Yeah, and that happened issue after issue. Obamacare was one of the issues that I looked at in my write-up of what happened. You know, during a discussion about Obamacare, there was a Kutztown University professor talking about her pre-existing conditions, and the president starts talking about what he thinks about healthcare, and then Stephanopoulos says, I have to stop you there. I just have to stop you there because on a couple of points. And then he goes on to talk about how Biden doesn't support socialized medicine. And then the president would later reply, well, he seems to be the only person in the Democratic Party who isn't for it. So therefore, he's going to get pushed there.
Right.
And then he goes on to name, looks like here, 2 or 3 to 4 bullet points about Obamacare, all positive. And then the president adds, well, Obamacare had an individual mandate where people were forced to buy health insurance and go bust, in his word, for things that they didn't want and for plans that didn't really go anywhere.
Well, I think the famous one was, you know, I'm a single man, but I have to buy pregnancy insurance.
Mm-hmm.
You know. Yeah, so, I mean, it was – this is, again, where it's just put the donkey ears on, George, so everybody knows where you're coming from. I mean, he's obviously after every – you know, these uncommitted voters saying – this person the last time voted for Hillary Clinton. Well, he should have started the show by saying, I'm George Stephanopoulos, and I voted for Hillary Clinton. In fact, I worked for Hillary Clinton.
And gave money to the Clinton Foundation.
So this, to me, was this Obamacare segment was especially kind of amusing because they're like, well, we'll now be turning to Alasia Black. Her name's spelled B-L-A-Q-U-E. Now, does anybody want to guess if that's really her last name? Because I'm going to say no. And then I went and looked her up on LinkedIn, and it's, yeah, she's not just a professor at Kutztown University. She's professor of African diasporic literature, history, and culture. In other words, you know, yeah, the usual black studies, whitey is bad academic discipline. So obviously here, ABC was saying, hey, let's find a college professor of African diasporic literature who has a lifelong pre-existing condition, and we'll let her ask a question about pre-existing conditions. I mean, how cooked could that possibly be?
Should pre-existing conditions, which Obamacare brought into brought to fruition, be removed?
No.
Without, please stop and let me finish my question, sir. Should that be removed within a 36 to 72 hour period without my medication, I will be dead. And I want to know what it is that you're going to do to assure that people like me who work hard, we do everything we're supposed to do, can stay insured. It's not my fault that I was born with this disease. It's not my fault that I'm a black woman and in the medical community, I'm minimized and not taken seriously. I want to know what you are going to do about that.
And that's what the media constantly do. And they don't apologize. They talk about how we need to be more civil. You know, this has been going on for 10 years, pretty much, since the Gabby Gifford shooting, that civility, we need to choose civility. You'll see those bumper stickers still out on the road. And yet you have a news media that's going around and trying to say that Republican policies or trying to just merely do something different, provide a opposing view, an alternative to Obamacare, which I guess you can say now is the status quo, is a life or death situation, and therefore we cannot even discuss them. That's what Tucker Carlson talked about last night on tying it to COVID, but it was kind of the same argument that there should be opposing views. There should no one person or group has the right answer.
Well, but this is always the thing about socialized medicine, is that, as usual, the political appeal is, we the Democrats, we the socialists are for life, and the Republicans are for death. And that's right. That's the way it gets set up. And it's like, again, none of these people are ever going to focus on the idea of socialists will promise you a right to health care. And then when they're in command of everything in Canada or in the UK, do you have a right to health care? You have a right to sit on in your chair for 12 months waiting for a procedure. That's the right you have. This is the setup they have, mm-hmm. as you suggest. I mean, their whole approach to this is to say, we're going to set this all up so that Trump looks like, he's either going to kill you by repealing Obamacare or he's going to kill you by his coronavirus response. Pick one. I mean, and they've allowed, you know, the Joe Biden can stand up and call him a climate arsonist, and that just gets a pass.
Glory Borger on CNN said it was powerful, and Breonna Keeler said it was pointed. There's no fact-checking of this. They just assume it to be true, because if you're not accepting Joe Biden's position, what's wrong with you? You're somehow the other. You're somehow beyond the pale. You're either too stupid to think for yourself or you're somehow evil. I will add, Professor Black told Brian Stelter in his newsletter that she would, before going into the town hall, she was, quote, on the fence about voting in 2020. And Trump, quote, reanimated me to vote for Joe Biden. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, do we think that Brian Stelter is going to interview the questioners? I hope he does. After the CNN town hall, when they're dissatisfied with Biden's answers and are decided they're going to vote for Trump?
Yeah, they'll want to talk about how there was probably a teleprompter in the corner. There's cue cards like a monologue on a late night comedy show to help Biden along through this.
Hey, let's squeeze in here the other questioner that I think upset you quite a bit and me, and that is Pastor Carl Day. Had a question about how Make America Great Again is a terrible, insensitive slogan because things have never been great in America for black people.
You've coined the phrase Make America Great Again.
Right.
When has America been great for African Americans in the ghetto of America? Are you aware of how tone deaf that comes off to African American community? Well, I mean, your statement is, though, make it great again. So historically, the African-American experience, especially in these ghettos that have been redlined, historically, these ghettos that have systemically been set up and treated the way that they have been, the conditions of the drugs, the guns, and everything else that actually created the symptoms for what we see, that you profess to be just the democratic cities in themselves, these things have historically been happening for African-Americans in these ghettos, and we have not been seeing a change. Quite frankly, under your administration, under the Obama's administration, under the Bush, under the Clinton, the very same things happen and the very same systems and cycles continue to ensue. And we need to see, because you say again, we need to see when was that great? Because that pushes us back to a time in which we cannot identify with such greatness. And I mean, you've said everything else about choking and everything else, but you have yet to address and acknowledge that there's been a race problem in America.
And we've heard this, and I'm sure we can address it in general. But I mean, again, talk about something that was carefully organized and sprung on Trump.
Yeah, it was. Came off like something from the 1619 Project or something out of the readout with Joy Reid. His question was, you coined the phrase Make America Great Again. When has America been great for African Americans in the ghetto? Are you aware of how tone deaf that comes off to the African American community? And so then he goes on after the president tries to give a response. He talks about redlining. He talks about blaming racism for why there's drugs and guns in some of these communities and democratic cities. And then he brings up the fact that, yeah, certain cities have been violent under multiple presidents going back to Bill Clinton, as if, you know, the president is the only person who could fix this sort of thing, that somehow the city officials in Baltimore and Chicago are they're removed, you know, they're absolved of any responsibility here. And he kept demanding him acknowledge that, quote, there's been a race problem in America. And you can talk about America having a complicated and a difficult past with race. But where I think a lot of Americans, and especially conservatives and people who revere the founders and the Constitution, really get lost and even really upset, like I did last night. I totally flipped out to Nick and I flipped out to you when it happened in real time, which is, you know, they want to create this kind of anti-American, America-hating, self-loathing idea, this picture about the country. And that's just, I don't see how that's patriotic or constructive at all.
Well, I mean, look, I think the problem here is that when you have a slogan like this and they want to say America's never been great, that they also don't understand how tone-deaf that sounds to a lot of voters. And again, we're talking about people. A lot of times what you're talking about is just people who believe in the promise of America, who believe that in what the American Revolution was and how it revolutionized the world and how it brought democracy and freedom. That's what people are talking about. Now, when Reagan used it in 1980, he was basically saying, let's make America great, because Jimmy Carter had, you know, was one of these presidents who always said, we're a terrible blot on the planet, the United States.
Yeah,
he was basically saying, let's not be that. They've read all the race stuff into here because, you know, they're always reading race into Trump's politics. But I think that What's interesting here was, if you look at Pastor Day's other tweets, he's actually talking about how they made the ghettos. I mean, that's the kind of thing where you want some pushback. You want to say, who's they? Who made the ghettos for you? I thought these people were opposed to conspiracy theories.
Right, exactly. And that's, this is kind of, you look at the recent poll that shows that, I forget the percent, 20% of millennials think Jews caused the Holocaust. You know, it's kind of the same sort of thing. There's all these conspiracy theories out there across the political spectrum and what you're seeing here. And this is one example. Last night, you had this question. You had the other one about COVID, about Trump throwing Americans under the bus, where it's just conspiracy theories. And the media aren't interested in that. Daniel Dale's not interested in that. He's interested in defending Biden from it, claims from the president, which are true, that he's against fracking, that he would eventually phase out fracking, those sorts of things. Again, you've talked about with looking at PolitiFact and the Washington Post, is they're not serious arbiters in terms of fact-checking. They're going to allow conspiracy theories out there because it makes sense to them. It's the Michael Wolff case. If it rings true, it is true.
Yeah, I mean, Daniel Dale was trending on Twitter because he came out with the usual sort of stelter-esque, it was a fire hose of lies, you know, and everybody loves that because, again, they presume that everything that comes out of Donald Trump's mouth is a lie. Now, obviously, yeah, the president sometimes bungles on the facts, but a lot of times they're upset that he says, we've done well on the coronavirus. Now, if we had President Hillary Clinton and she said we did well on the coronavirus, they'd say fact check true. There's so much in fact checking that is about my democratic impressions and opinions and not about facts at all.
Right, exactly. They would ignore what happened in New York, in New Jersey. Or they would actually, you know what, I think if Hillary were president, the media would actually maybe blame China for what's going on here. They would actually take that up and look at what happened in the lab. They would look at what happened in the wet markets, what was going on in the fall of last year. What happened to that doctor who discovered COVID? And was silenced and ended up dying, passing away. They would look into those sorts of things. Again, you know, this is what happened with every single Obama scandal, where they would say that Obama was somehow not involved, and then Obama would come out and say, I learned it on the news, you know? I learned it in the papers.
Yeah.
And you're like, wait a second, the president has top-level clearance. He received pretty much, if there's any intelligence on anything, the president has access to it and most often is briefed on it, okay? So this idea that, you know, that the Democratic presidents do not deserve responsibility for what goes on downstream in states and in cities, it's just the epitome of irresponsibility.
Well, this is where the partisanship comes in, is that, you know, you have these reporters standing up at press briefs and basically implying that every death from coronavirus is Trump's fault. We all understand if Hillary Clinton was president that it would not be Hillary Clinton's fault, not a single one. And again, yeah, what are the states in America that have the highest death totals run by Democrats? And yet, yeah, what we get with Andrew Cuomo is he gets syrupy interviews from his brother with large Q-tips on CNN. He doesn't get held accountable.
The death toll in those states are the president's fault. But death tolls in states like Arizona, in Texas, in Florida are the governor's fault. So what you have here with COVID is a great example of how the news media, particularly CNN and MSNBC, aren't big fans of federalism generally. They like applying federalism when it fits their narratives, because otherwise, as leftists, they're all about the power of the state and the federal government. So their default is to, when something goes wrong, not look at who the governor or the mayor is or the city council is. They're going to blame the president. But, you know, when things go wrong in red states, even though the death toll in states like Texas and Arizona and Florida were nowhere near as large as New York, the governors of those states are blamed, that those people don't really care. But what happens in New York and Connecticut and New Jersey was on the president.
Yeah, I mean, this is the sort of thing where we would try to tell people who come to Newsbusters and are looking for what we're actually watching, what we're trying to transcribe, what we're trying to explain to you. And that is that the news is a product where they very carefully organize information and how they very obviously decide who's going to get blame, who's going to get credit, Who's going to be absolved? Who's going to be ignored? These are all the things you should come to Newsbusters and learn something about. We invite you to come by every day, several times a day, every hour. Monitor us on Twitter.
Morning, evening.
Well, that's certainly the way we are. I mean, yeah. We're in at 6 in the morning. Curtis works until like 3 in the morning sometimes because he's just the hardest working man of Media Bias. So join us again on the Newsbusters podcast. In the meantime, just remember, we here at Newsbusters, we watch it so you don't have to. Thanks for listening.